It's Cofield and Company.
We only have one rule on this team.
What is that rule?
ELE.
That's right, ELE. What does ELE stand for?
Everybody love everybody.
Everybody love everybody.
With Steve Cofield.
Well, I don't need to shave because it don't grow in right here and right here.
Now you're telling me that you were so ingrained with white trash DNA that your facial hair actually grows in on its own, all white trashy like that?
And Adam Hill.
Sir, one more outburst, I will strangle you with my microphone wire. You understand me?
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Give me your booze. I am nourished by your hatred.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right, here we go on this Thursday. Cofield and Company, Chrissy, Adam, Cofield. 3 hours on the way. Got a lot to get into, a lot of Vegas-related stories that are big nationally as well. Bryce Harper update later on. NBA trade deadline just passed. The biggest names didn't go, but there were some pretty intriguing deals that went down. We'll get into the Lakers later in the show with Mike Trudell, sideline reporter, outstanding sideline reporter, and host on 710 ESPN in L.A. But we do have the Golden Knights on tap. Set it up for us, Adam. What's happening today?
4:30, Golden Knights at Detroit. Very, very conflicted today, Steve. Very difficult day for me. As the Golden Knights get set to play the Red Wings at Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit, Michigan. It's the end of a four-game road trip, and usually on a four-game road trip, you're shooting for 4 points. You want to get 1 point per game on the road. You want to try to win, 75% of your games at home. That's kind of the goal for how you want to get through a season. And right now, they had a disastrous start to the road trip. They lost the first two. They were facing a game at Tampa Bay, the best team in the league. Could have gone 0-3 to start the trip, extended their losing streak to 5, but they didn't. They found a right way to rally, come back, win that game 3-2 the other night. But you can't allow that to linger. You can't celebrate. You can't be happy about that because you got to bounce back. And if you lose to Detroit, you're just giving those points right back. So it's a big game where you're a -160 favorite on the road. That means you should win it. But coming off that game the other day, how do you react? Are you proud of yourselves and patting yourselves on the back and kind of let that creep into this game? Or do you build off that, you take the momentum, and you go on the road and try to get the win? Because right now they're in a pretty comfortable spot as far as the playoffs go. They're 10 points clear of the wild card, so they're in firmly in third place. But you don't want to finish third. You want to try to catch either San Jose or in particular Calgary to try to win the division.
Why not?
You would start on the road. So if you finish third, you're playing on the road against either Calgary or San Jose in the first round. That's not a desirous position. I mean, they won a playoff series on the road last year when they had to play Winnipeg, but they had home ice in those first two series, and it proved very valuable because they're so much better at home than they are on the road. You want to have home ice advantage as long as you can in the playoffs. And if you're third place in the division, you're not going to start any series at home. And so you don't want to finish there. You don't want to be matched up against one of those two teams and have to try to go through both of them just to get to the Western Conference Final.
Do you think it's unlikely they can catch Calgary or San Jose?
Calgary's going to be tough. I mean, the way they're playing, I've said it a couple times, I think, here on the show, but the fact that, Calgary is playing so much above where everybody expected. And what you can say is, well, they're not going to keep this up. This is insane. You can't continue this level. Nobody expected this out of them. Well, that's the same thing everybody said about the Golden Knights last year when everybody got upset. All the fans were like, why can't they keep this going? And they did. They kept it going all throughout the season. So I don't think you can just rely on Calgary coming back to earth and crash landing at some point. They are playing out of their minds, and they just continue to do so and build up points. So that's going to be difficult to catch them. But if you get hot and start playing really well, you can. The real problem there is that San Jose is in between. So you have to not only catch Calgary, but also catch San Jose and hope that both teams kind of stumble a little bit. Because right now, if Calgary stumbles, it's San Jose that's playing well enough to perhaps move in there. I think they only lost 3 times all last month. San Jose is starting to play the way a lot of people expected them to, and that becomes even more difficult. It's not just catching one team. It's trying to catch two different teams that are ahead of you.
Game time, 4:30. So we'll keep you updated on what's going on over on Fox 1340 and 98.9 FM.
Brandon Peary scratched tonight, by the way. Healthy scratch.
So why is that a story?
Brandon Peary was a phenomenon for the first 9 games that he was up here in Vegas, was scoring every single night. could not be stopped, and it has been a real struggle for him to really generate any kind of offense lately. And so he's out of the lineup, healthy scratch tonight. Maybe give him a chance to watch and think about some things. Oscar Lindberg will be in, and actually pretty notable in the sense that Ryan Carpenter got hurt last game. So it's not just like we're going to give, you know, we're going to give somebody a shot here. Tomas Nosek could have moved in, or he did move in for Carpenter, and Oscar Lindberg's coming in for Peary. So really, it just a straight healthy scratch for Brandon Peary, who has not generated the kind of offense he did early in the season. He got to those 10 games where he needed to be waiver exempt, and now he's kind of fallen off the earth a little bit. So probably a chance for him to sit, watch things, and maybe figure out how to get back to where he was earlier in the season.
The Knights are back at T-Mobile on
Saturday.
Okay. Columbus.
Columbus coming to town.
All right. So I'm guessing you haven't been down around the strip this week, have you?
This week, no, I have not.
Okay. I was going to ask you if you'd seen progress on our stadium.
Well, I have to drive by that every day.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot. Yeah. So high.
So high.
By the way, enjoy that 15. I don't want this to spiral into more traffic talk, but was seeing the note last week from a dude at your paper who does a good job covering the local scene, Mick Akers, saying, that Trop interchange should be done crisply around 2025.
I was gonna obnoxiously say 2024.
It's 2020. It's 2025 that it'll be done. You know, Mandalay, the stadium, Trop, and the 15. And you have to go through there.
I'm just going to start. Well,
sucks for me, too, because going to Thomas and Mack and the airport, obviously, that's, you know, for me, because I'm coming from the north. I like to zip down the 15 when it's actually open.
I was just going to say something really stupid that,
yeah.
By the way, I live on Dean Martin. I can just drive straight up Dean Martin.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to be any better. It's going to be that's right in front of the stadium. That's stupid.
What are the chances that Dean Martin ever doesn't have a lane closed, cones up, construction.
It's completely.
I told you last time I went down to your neighborhood, I just blew by your street. I had no idea where you lived because there were new buildings on the opposite side of the street. It totally threw me off. We went to lunch today, a little business meeting today, and we're driving down towards Durango on 215, and all of a sudden there was some new construction on the left, and I'm like, wait, where am I? Like, new buildings just completely throw me off because it changes the landscape and what you're used to, and you're like, wait, what?
Well, my neighborhood, there's a massive school right across the street from my house now.
I had no idea it was there.
Yeah. It's massive.
Had no idea, and it totally threw me off last time I was down there. So, the reason I asked about the stadium is, listen, this is coming quick, right? The roads aren't going to be done, but there's going to be two football teams playing in that stadium very shortly here.
Yeah.
Right? And one of them is UNLV. And UNLV just announced today a new ticket program for the new stadium. What do you think about this? It's a faithful fan pricing. If you buy season tickets for UNLV football for the 2019 season, the final go around, boy, it's going to be sad, isn't it? At Sam Boyd, if you buy season tickets for 2019, you get 2020 season tickets, or at least the option to buy your 2020 UNLV season tickets at the new stadium at the same price. The prices are going to go up.
Oh, yeah.
In the new stadium.
A very cool idea.
Season ticket prices are as low as $99 now at Sam Boyd. So that'll be one of the packages available if you lock it in.
I think it's a really cool idea.
And keep in mind, from what I hear, unless ticket sales go boffo, I don't know like what'll happen. I think the first game is what, Cal? In 2020, the new stadium for UNLV football will only be configured for about 36,000 seats to start.
Oh,
now,
cool.
By demand, if there's a need for more, then obviously they're going to open up more. But I think the last thing they want to do is have the entire stadium there, you know, a la Temple, you know, years ago, trying to play at the Vet and then the whatever they, what do they call it now? That's right. It is the Link. I can never get the FU Center out of my head as one of the venues, but I think they changed that one too.
It was the Spectrum?
No, this was the new.
Right.
The Spectrum is the old one. It was the new arena. The arena's still there, but it was, for a little while, it was like First Union Bank, so it was the FU Center.
Now, is it Wells Fargo now?
So I have no idea.
It might be.
Yeah, I don't, it, but so fitting for Philadelphia.
Of course. The FU.
Yeah,
the FU Center.
The FU Center.
I mean, I think it's a cool idea. Like, I think it will actually drive people. Like, I was considering, when I saw this announcement today, I was like, I think I'll buy two tickets for this season so I could buy tickets in the new place just because I have to go anyway. I'll be working, but I know I'll have people in town. Like, hey, I just want to see the stadium. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, here's two tickets. You can use my tickets for this. I think it's a cool idea. Obviously, what it's geared to is, hey, let's get people to go out and see the games this year. It's really a selling point for this stadium, not the new stadium. It's hey, you're going to go next year, so you might as well lock in your tickets by buying them this year, which is, it's a cool idea.
UNLV Hoops on the road last night. They got it done. They got it done. That place is a house of freaking horrors, historically, for the Running Rebels. If it's a tight game and it's in the final 3 minutes, you could bank on the fact that something heartbreaking was going to happen to UNLV. Last night, it did not. They shot the ball well from the free throw line down the stretch. They played defense. They got defensive stops when it counted, and that losing streak with all these 17-point losses is bye-bye, and they grabbed a nice win on the road at Boise. We'll break it down.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas with Steve Cofield and Adam Hill.
Turns the other way, puts it off the glass. Good defense by Ibaka, and the rebound grabbed by Hamilton. Hardy to Blair. Blair shoots a three, knocks it down, and it's 23-19, and Boise State calls a timeout.
Well, that was a good moment in the game for UNLV because they got off to an 8-0, or they were behind 8-0 in the game. And, you know, the last four games, they were down 9-3, 18-8, 18-9, 19-7. It's like, guys, come on. Come out of the gates and get something done. And then the three started falling. 23-19 then. Then they fell behind again. And then somehow, in spite of allowing Boise to shoot 62% in the first half, and the somehow as they made threes, they got it to 43-39 at the break. They go on to win the game. We'll get into the elements in the second half. 83-72. You hear the call there on Learfield IMG College. New name, right? Big partnership with the two big broadcast folks on the college sports side. I thought the end of the first half was really interesting because I felt like they were going to get blown off the floor, and they fought back. You know, it's funny. When a call goes against the team, fans freaking flip out. UNLV got such a benefit out of a call in the final minute, and no one mentioned it. Not that I saw. I wasn't all over social media, but there was a ball out of bounds off a UNLV player. The refs last night, I'm blanking on the one guy's name who cannot run. I don't even know how this guy's officiating. He's some big oaf.
Well, BCR was out there, wasn't he?
Bill Clinton ref was there, and so was David Hall. Which, by the way, I was told by some people that Dave Hall of Fox 5 would like us to say David Hall because he doesn't want to be associated with Dave Hall, the referee.
That's fair.
That's just the deal.
But I say we're just going to keep calling him Dave Hall.
So ball goes out of bounds. UNLV retains possession. They show the replay in the building. And we all look up and we're like, ooh, that was right off the chest or stomach of a UNLV player. UNLV gets the inbounds, three. Make it.
Huge.
That was a big turnaround, and they don't have that three in the second half. The game's closer. Could have made a difference, right? So, First half, you just mentioned something. What game are you watching up here?
St. Francis, Central Connecticut.
And who were you mentioning as having old man game?
The kid that plays point guard for Central Connecticut. I mean, I don't know if it's...
Why do you say that?
It's just a lot of, like, pivoting, and, I mean, he'll just bring the ball down. He basically plays every position. But it's backboard, it's pivots, it's, you know, bounce passes, and he's also bald, so it just kind of helps out, makes him look older.
There's one guy I would say, because even Coach Noah doesn't have old man game. I would say, actually, the guy who has old man game on UNLV is...
Well, Shakur Justin does.
He's not playing. Right, Nick Blair does.
Yeah, he does.
And it was funny, during the game, Robert Smith mentioned it, because in that first half, it was a lot of one-on-one, right? And they made a lot of threes. They made 8 of 15 threes, so they were fortunate, but it was a lot of one-on-one, unassisted baskets. Fast, like going too fast. And they both pointed out, John and Robert, that Mick Blair, you know, everything's a little bit slower and more deliberate, and he's scanning the scene. And on the Boise side, you know, we talk about the old man basketball. Boise's guards are both old man basketball players, and they were really effective. They're really effective. They're great cutters. They know what they're doing with the ball to find bigs on the pick and roll. So Alex Hobbs and Jessup gave the Rebels a lot of trouble. Lots.
Yeah, and Jessup is a guy who, he's a guard, but he's very tall. He's lanky.
He's 6'6", and he's not a super ball handler. I'll tell you, he was bringing the ball up the floor because they denied the point guard who was in there for Boise, and I was like, I don't think he's going to get it up the floor against Clyburn.
Somehow he does.
Right. But once it gets into the half court, especially Hobbs. Hobbs is one of these dudes. He's like 6'4", 210, doesn't look like a great player. But, man, the freaking backdoor cuts, the baseline, just that. It's kind of the same thing as Sam Merrill. You know, working around the lane, right, and finding spots where you hit a 13-footer, actually using the glass.
Yeah.
And that comes with experience. And Boise's an experienced team. But I'll tell you, down the stretch, it looked like UNLV was the experienced team because when they needed to make defensive stops, they made them. They forced a shot clock violation. They forced another terrible shot. I can't remember if the shot got off, but it was the 6'9 kid, Alston, who's a wing who weighs like 150 pounds. He got trapped on the sideline. I think he stepped out of bounds, right? So that was essentially a turnover. Alston also came down the floor in a 2-on-1 situation, had an easy lob to the big kid Wacker, and just blew the lob. You know, there was a defensive player in the way, and at least enough of a distraction, blew the lob. So those were three big plays. There was another big play. They didn't get any offensive rebounds, UNLV. Boise's big guys, they're both, not to be mean, but they're both kind of stiffs. They're 6.4 rebound guys. Wacker and Haney. For some reason, Haney always goes off on UNLV. Last year, I think he averaged 10-8 in the two games. Has two double-doubles in his career. One is against UNLV. And last night he had an effective game. But they were doing such a good job on the offensive boards, or I guess in their case, defensive boards, that they blocked out UNLV in most cases. And there were two big situations. What was it? 71-70, and UNLV missed a shot. And Mbake got in there, and he's been hurt for a while now. He's come back. He's not completely healthy. He grabbed an offensive rebound. They turned that into, I think it was a short jumper by Nick Blair to go 73-70. That's five little plays. Little things. Playing defense, grabbing an offensive rebound, and that changes everything, especially at a place like Boise where the Rebels over the years, the smallest things have beaten them. I mean, they've had two overtime losses there. Yep. And obviously the worst was the, celebration hurt round Las Vegas with Leon Rice.
The delayed ending.
2014, DeVille Smith in overtime hits a three. It's good. They go and review it, and Dave Rice and Leon Rice are like 5 feet away from each other. Randy McCall comes out, and he's like, nope, basket's out, no good. And Leon Rice is like, right in Dave Rice's face. But they've had terrible luck there.
Yeah, and listen, Boise is not the same team they were. It's not like they went up and beat the Boise team that's going to win the league.
No.
But it's still, it's one of the more difficult places to play in the league. It's a borderline top half of the league team. Those are games that you want to win. I mean, it's, you probably look at it and you go into the game being, 5.5, 6 point underdog. So it's a game you think you can win, but you're not really expecting to. And then you go out and, you shoot the ball like they did, you're going to win. And by the way, that's also part of why the offensive rebounding is down a little bit. Like you talked about,
everything
did well. No. But if you're shooting that well, there's not that many offensive rebounds to get.
They went 14 of 26 from three. They're shooting 41.2% in conference, which is nuts. Right? Preseason, what's the theme? This team can't shoot?
Well, it's also a different team now.
It is a more guard-oriented team.
Yeah,
They're not playing as big as they were. They were playing a 6'8 dude at small forward and two true bigs. Now they've gone small.
Yeah, and I mean, that was out of necessity because of injuries, but it also has transformed what the team looks like, and that is another factor in the offensive rebounding, that they were a really good offensive rebounding team at the beginning of the year, and, now they don't have that same kind of a lineup. It's a bunch of guards that are out there shooting threes. And
when was the last – think about this, though. Historically, I don't think you can name a time. When was the last time we could break down a UNLV game and say the other team better not play zone. It's actually been the complete opposite. Yeah. You always want to zone UNLV.
Yeah, they've always, because they've been a lot. They've had a lot of really good wings that are good at isolating, and if you try to when you try to match them up, they'll beat you one on one. But if you try to zone them, they've had issues. Now
they were also a super super impatient team that would jack bad threes.
Yeah.
And last night, I didn't think they shot a ton of great threes in the first half. Solid. Second half, though, they shot good threes. That was some of the best ball movement. Now, Boise's not a great defensive team, but they took advantage of it by throwing it, you know, around the perimeter, inside and out, three or four times, and then, you know, the guy finally gets it, and he's wide open for a three.
You still have to make them, but
yeah.
In the first half, I thought when, you know, it was bad defense. It was, like, there was, I think, a one play where I think it was Robotham was going to go around a screen, and the guy just went totally under the screen. Robotham was like, I guess I have to shoot. If you're that far away from him, I'm just going to shoot it. There's another one, I think, Blair, that came off a screen on the left wing. And yeah. Just kind of, he caught the pass, and he was like, all right, nobody's here.
Yeah, well, he's going to shoot it. He's an interesting weapon because no one is scouting for him to shoot threes.
No.
And he actually wasn't shooting that well. You know, he had two good games, and then he wasn't shooting that well in the middle. But last night, he shot well. And that's why, you know, it's funny when people tell the story of UNLV with, you know, being small and mismatches, it's always, oh, they're so big, the other team. And as I was sitting looking, I'm like, yeah, they can beat Hobbs and Jessup on defense. Those are big guards. They have small guys.
Yeah.
On the UNLV side, they can beat them. You have a speed advantage. I'll give you a couple other things that were key. I thought the subbing early and, like, a very different mix. Like, Amari Hardy is one of the key players on this team. They need him to score, but they need him to defend. And he was getting torched by Hobbs. And it's 3 minutes in the game, and Marvin Menzies goes to the bench. He's like, all right, let's go, freshman. You're in.
Well, anyway,
Bryce Hamilton, you're in.
And I think that was the key. He goes to Bryce Hamilton, who hasn't got a whole lot of opportunity, and he hasn't really played all that well. At times he had stretches where he looked good and he shot well, but yesterday they put him in very early in the game, and he gives him a three right away. And I think it settled him into the game pretty well.
Other message sent. Joel Tomboy is one of the best scorers on the team, but he struggles defensively at times. You know, lacks concentration, and he's having trouble against bigger, stronger inside players. He's having trouble working, you know, with the screener between committing bad fouls. He was getting a little too emotional.
Yeah.
He got his third early in the second half, and that was it. He went out, didn't play.
It was definitely a message sender. I think there was no question. And
I'm not even sure if the intent, you know, just to break that down, I'm not even sure if the intent in the game is I'm going to send a message. I think it's one of those, hey, the situations moving forward just didn't dictate him going back in. And it happens. Yeah, if you talk to Marvin Menzies, there's a lot of times he's like, oh, wait, that guy didn't play a whole lot. Because you get into the game, you think he was sending a message.
I always think that's playing. Just like, oh, you know, there was no, because instead of explaining your decision to people that ask, you just say, oh, you know, I just realized I didn't really put him in the game. Coaches know. And then their assistant coaches are telling them, and the players are telling them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they know. I do think there's more to substitution patterns than coaches will tell you. And it just seemed like it yesterday. I mean, in a close game like that, if you have a weapon like that on your bench and he's not playing at all, you're gonna go to him at some point. And I think when you don't, it's a message.
I do think his situation's new now with Jong back. Nick Blair's now playing center.
Yeah.
So Nick Blair is going to play the four, and they're probably going to go small most times. So now Tomboy, in spite of being one of the best freshmen from a points-per-game standpoint in the conference, is going to have to fight to make sure he's on the floor. He's going to have to be a two-way player.
Yeah, it's not going to be – you're not going to be playing out of complete necessity. There is more to earning it now that there's some more bodies back.
Interesting game last night with Reno on the road at Colorado State. Struggled for much of the game to put away CSU. It was a 7-point game at the under 4 timeout. They pull away, but at the very end of the game, they throw down an alley-oop up big, and CSU's coach did not react well. Obviously, the crowd did not react well. And there's something here with the way Musselman is handling the end of games.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
96-82, Rams trail in the forecourt. Here comes Kendall Moore. Lobs it down low to Carvacho. Ball knocked away by Martin. And he'll take it in the forecourt. Going to lob it up alley-oop to his brother.
With 17 seconds to go, he dunks it home. Right, that's one of those where you walk it across the half-court line, you let it dribble out to let the time go, and now the Ram fans are really upset, as they should be. There's the buzzer. And this game ended in an ugly way.
That's a call of the CSU-Reno game last night. Brian Roth on the call. He's actually on the horn with us right now as we wanted to get into the end of the game because this is a recurring theme with Reno and Musselman and the Martin twins. What's up, Brian? It's Cofield and Company here in Vegas.
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks, guys, for having me on. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. We obviously love covering this rivalry with, I'll use it once, Nevada. We're not keen on calling Nevada Nevada, so that's how childish the rivalry has become. But I want you to take us through the situation there at the end of the game as it appeared to be over, and essentially we liken it to the victory formation in football, and all of a sudden there's an alley-oop going up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the clock is under 20 seconds to go, and you heard right there Colorado State, I think, turned it over, and then Cody Martin gets it and into the fourth court and the alley-oop to his brother, and again the shot clock is off at that point. And yeah, just to me, there was no reason for it, especially you got two guys like the Martin twins who are so good and have done so many good things in this league for the last year and a half. And, I didn't see any reason for it. I know our coaching staff was not happy about it at all either. And when the two coaches, Nico Medved for the Rams and Eric Musselman, were going through the line, Nico Medved said something, and then Eric Musselman said, well, hey, listen, we're trying to protect our net rankings. And
Brian, yep. That he said that after Nico tried to snub him.
Correct. Nico snubbed him. He walked by, and then he said it to one of the other assistant Ram coaches. Excuse me. So he's saying, well, hey, listen, every possession counts is basically what he said, and we're trying to protect the ranking when it comes to Selection Sunday. And look, that's complete horse crap, as you guys know. And there wasn't a reason for it, guys. I mean, that was a 14-point game, and there was not a reason for it. And listen, Eric Musselman, we've seen him twice in the last 2 years. Colorado State has seen him twice run around the Lawler Event Center court without his shirt on. 2 years ago, they won the regular season championship over Colorado State in the final game of the year, and then last year he did the same thing. Took off his shirt, ran around, swinging it around in the Lawler Event Center, and that was pretty much it for me in terms of respect that I had for Eric Musselman.
So, I mean, I guess we saw on the court what happened. We saw that there was definitely some irritation at the very least. What was there anything said post game or anything that came out afterwards that we know about besides just that interaction on the floor? Were they still angry about it later on?
Well, I talked to Nico Medved, the head basketball coach of Colorado State, for our post game radio interview, and he got to us where we still had about 2 minutes before we were back live on air. We were in commercial break, and Nico was not happy about it, and just didn't think it was necessary. And basically, the prevailing thought was, Nevada is a good enough team, and they've been a good enough team the last couple of years where they don't need to do stuff like that. It's just completely unnecessary. But at the end of the day, as Nico said, he said, listen, if they want to go about their business that way, they're more than welcome to. And I'm not going to raise a big stink about it. Look at this. They're really good. They got us. And if they want to throw alley-oops with the shot clock dark in a 14-point game, then that's up to them. But that's just not the way that we're going to run our program. And pretty much said he was just going to let it go. Certainly irritated, but at the end of the day, you move on. That was the second time that the Rams had played the Nevada Wolfpack, so probably won't see him again unless they run into him in the conference tournament.
It is an interesting, the whole net ranking thing is interesting. It's surprising they brought it up on the floor, but listen, Musselman has done interviews about this already this season. He's talked about it. I know it was something late in the game here at UNLV that I was thinking about, that they were still going to push, and the fact that they still had the starters on the floor in like a 20-point game was silly to a lot of people, but it's what he said. I guess, does it change it that they've talked about it openly, and do teams, I guess Colorado State wasn't aware, but should teams be just ready, say, hey, we know they're going to do this, they've talked about it, and we have to be prepared for them to play all the way till the end?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I can tell you this. I mean, the guys that Colorado State had on the court, the players, certainly that's not going through their minds.
Right.
And that was a hard-fought game. That was a 3-point, a 5-point, 7-point game for a majority of the second half. And, you know, Colorado State felt like they really had a chance to win that game up until about a minute 45, 2 minutes to go in the contest, when some fouls went against Colorado State and some free throws went down for Nevada. And all of a sudden, it became a 12-point game with, you know, a minute 45 to go. And then at that point, they realized, okay, this game's probably over. But, you know, I mean, listen, the players aren't thinking about that. The coaches aren't. And the game of basketball has been played, at least by the classy programs, the same way for the last 30, 40 years, where, again, you're up by 15, up by 14, shot clock is dark, you go ahead and you bring it across half-court line, dribble it out, coaches start coming to mid-court. You know, 2 points at Colorado State in early February, if that's going to get them a 3 seed instead of a 4 seed or a 4 seed instead of a 5 seed, well, I don't believe it's going to make a big difference. But if they believe that that might be a difference between a 3 seed or a 4 seed or whatever they think they're going to get, then I guess more power to them.
I think that's ridiculous. I mean, I get what you're saying. We're talking to Brian Roth, voice of Colorado State. Last night, Reno down the stretch, throws an alley-oop. Basically, the game's over. Crowd goes nuts negatively. CSU head coach Nico Medved not happy either, because I think what's going to happen here, and I'm not saying anyone's going to do it on purpose, because the same thing happened in UNLV. They threw an alley-oop in the final 2 minutes. I was shocked that the Martin twins were out there till the very end of the game. And there actually was a scramble late where guys are going to the floor. Hey, you know, if they want to throw alley-oops and they want to play to the very end, they want to play hard, then if the Martin twins get hurt, so be it. And I'm not saying a coach is going to do it on purpose, but players will be guarding. I guarantee you, players will be guarding against this in games moving forward.
Yeah, no, and I think because it has happened a couple of times, and certainly what happened last night, and I've had a lot of people text me today and ask me about it, where, you know, I mean, our guys literally were not looking for it. I mean, it was an uncontested alley-oop from half court, and our guys were coming back across that fourth line and saying, okay, hey, listen, you guys got us, congratulations. But you try to do that again, other teams are going to be aware, and you're trying to throw an alley-oop up by double figures in the final seconds of a game. Yeah, I mean, if I'm an opposing player, I'm going hard after the guy going to the hoop.
Yep.
And I'm probably putting a knee into his chest and sending him into the basketball stand. Or not trying to hurt somebody, but, hey, you want to send a message as Nevada saying you're going to play for all 40 minutes and throw alley-oops with under 20 seconds to go in a double-digit game, other teams can send a message of their own as well. So, you know, it's also interesting. Nevada's not a very deep team, guys. I mean, mm-hmm. As you know, they play the Martin Twins, you know, 36 to 40 minutes a game. They play Caroline 36 to 40 minutes a game. And then they mix in a few other guys. They're not very deep. And when Colorado State was up in Reno 2 weeks ago, CSU got blown out in the second half. And it's a 40-point game with 2 minutes to go, and Caleb Martin is still out there. And I don't think he was out there because Eric Musselman was trying to run up the score. I think he was out there because they don't have a lot of other options, because they just aren't a very deep team. And I know they've added some pieces from last year, but to me it's still a three-man team for the Wolfpack. It's the Martin twins and Caroline. And if one of those guys go down, in particular Caleb Martin or Jordan Caroline goes down, their chances of making a run in the NCAA tournament virtually go out the window.
So on the Rams, what's going on these last four games? Because they've actually looked to turn the season around. A good win against, Fresno? Obviously the weird blowout, just ripping Air Force. What has changed?
Yeah, well, you know, they're getting better. And, you know, it's a new coaching staff trying to change the culture a little bit, and really two different philosophies. Larry Eustace was there for 6 years, and you know, Larry has his ways of doing business, and the new coaching staff has really a different way of going about their coaching. And I think it's taken a little time, and, you know, it's a Ram team that I think you'll see a lot of turnover on this team coming up next year. There'll be a lot of guys that aren't coming back, and it'll be a very different look, and certainly in 2 years, really different look. But it's a team, I think, that's kind of buying into what Nico Medved is teaching, and they're starting to get out and run a little bit. And, you know, they've had some games where they've been pretty good. I mean, they just dominated Air Force twice. You mentioned the Fresno State game. They dominated Fresno State and really dominated New Mexico at home. They were up 25 at home against New Mexico with a minute and a half to go in that contest. And then obviously the folks in Vegas in the conference opener saw the Rams there at the Thomas and Mack Center in a game that went right down to the very end. So yep. And they have a legit stud in Nico Garbaccio, the leading rebounder in the entire nation. He's averaging 16 points and 13 rebounds on the season. That goes up to 17 and 13 and a half in conference games only. And so, and I think it's a team that, from an athletic standpoint, when they go on the floor against Reno, or they go on the floor against UNLV, or you know, there's a big time difference in athletic ability. But you know, Colorado State has been playing pretty good team basketball. I expect them to win seven, maybe eight games in conference play, and maybe be a tough out in the conference tournament.
Hey, Brian, we appreciate a couple minutes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Okay, we'll see you. Yeah, CSU can actually make a run down the stretch. I was impressed the first time around. They ran some really nice stuff.
Yeah, he's a really good coach.
He is a good coach. But coming up, they can go on a run here. At Wyoming, they actually play Wyoming twice, and Wyoming's beat the hell.
Yeah.
It's a big rival. Home San Diego State, at San Jose. They got a couple tough ones at Boise, at New Mexico. They close with Utah State and UNLV as the final game of the season on March 9th. One more thing, because I want to go out to Pizza Rock here, is where we've got another hockey viewing party with Clay Baker's on the scene today, so we'll find out what's going on at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. The point that Brian made there in the final 2 minutes about, especially the game there in Reno, they beat Colorado State 100-60. You don't have seven players on the team. My eyes absolutely saw another, you know, five, six, seven guys on the bench. Put a walk-on in. I'm telling you, something is going to happen with the way Musselman operates here, and I'm all about what Brian said, because what we're getting is a lot of response. What we're getting is a lot of response saying, you know, stop being pansy, stop complaining. This ain't me. Believe me. If I'm some 6'7 dude and I'm on the losing side and one of the Martin twins comes in to throw an alley-oop, I'm body slamming him. And I might be out the rest of the season. So that's the way I play. Okay? And I couldn't play. But that's the way I play. I'm telling you, something's going to happen. Because Reno's acting like the big bully on the block, but they are very fragile. They don't have this super deep rotation. Someone's gonna do something at some point. Muss is playing with fire here.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas with Steve Cofield and Adam Hill.
All right, back here. Big day of hockey. VGK on the road at Detroit. And we've got our hockey viewing party over at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. Well, this is fitting. Who will... Has Clay Baker switched? Did he pull a Big Mac? Does he say we for the Red Wings and VGK? What's up, Clay?
Hey, what's up, man? You know what? I haven't gone there yet. I still feel like I just sit there and I cheer for both teams, which sounds like really fake and phony, but there's no way to give up the allegiance of Detroit scar tissue.
Exactly.
Just because of the Golden Knights. So I'm here in the Fleury jersey, and I'll just be rooting for everybody. But this place is full and getting fuller with Vegas Golden Knights fans here. It's Pizza Rock at GVR. And I think a lot of people know already, because of all the great parties you guys have done already, that they know if you wear your VGK gear, you get a complimentary beer with a $10 purchase. But this place is great. We got $5, $7, $8 pizzas, and of course, $3 or $4 PBRs for 32 ounces, $4 well drinks, and of course, $2 off any draft or specialty cocktails. But what I love is that we're going to see like the Red Wings play, and it's going to be like me trying to like hold it in and yell for good things and bad, but it's like not the goals you yell at. You yell at like the hits and against the boards, and I'm just going to be making noise throughout like an escaped mental patient.
How many Red Wings sweaters do you have?
I got when they used to call them sweaters, and they don't fit anymore because they're rather robust and tight in the belly. I think it ends at 10. think
really?
It ends at 10.
Wow.
Because
when
I was
Darren
a teenager,
McCarty?
I have a Darren McCarty. I have a Harold Sneps and Adam Oates. Remember Adam Oates wouldn't score 500 goals after he was traded from the Red Wings? I have a bunch of players that don't play anymore. Kind of like those great Detroit Lions jerseys, like the Tatum Bell Detroit Lions jersey, which is extremely embarrassing. But, yeah, man, you remember the sweaters? They used to get, like, those little fur balls attached to them, and if you, like, wash them in with a pair of towels, next thing you know, you look like a Christmas ornament. It's really bad. But, you know, for me, this is like coming home. And, like, Gerard Gallant, Adam, is coming home to Detroit, the city that made him famous as a player. And I feel like
beloved. Today's
a magical moment.
Yeah, he's beloved in Detroit. I've heard from many people back there talking about, hey, I can't believe you get to talk to Gerard Gallant. And I'm like, yeah, he loves me too.
You could just tell the loving looks and the glances he gives you when you start off with a question and then he ends it with that death stare.
I
love that when
mess,
the like electric
that, eh?
Rays come out of the eyes. Oh, that's good. I try to keep the questions to a minimum.
All right, Clay, we'll check in about an hour, see how it's going, okay? There you go, Clay Baker. Down at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. As you mentioned, happy hour's going on right now. $5, $7, $8 on the personal pizzas or specialty pizzas at 7 and 8. The meatballs are 4. What else do you order?
Oh, Chrissy was panicking. There's a apple and gorgonzola salad that's tremendous.
You eat salad?
The gorgonzola fries.
Yeah, the gorgonzola fries are good.
That's good too.
So good.
Truffle fries, everything's good.
And then you can be a man and order a mega pizza.
Tonight would be the day for the Detroit Red Top, right?
The Detroit Red Top. That's exactly where I was going.
Get the Detroit style with the Red Wings on the TV. It'll be good.
So Red Wings, 4:30 start. VGK is on the road. Pizza Rock is our viewing spot. Green Valley Ranch, Green Valley Ranch, Green Valley Ranch, and parking is free. How about that? We like that, right? A quick update on. We haven't seen anything come down because I want to get to the NBA trade deadline here in less than 5. Nothing has come down with Bryce Harper. This is amazing. Now, the latest rumor is now the Giants want to meet with him. Stories out there that now the Bryce Derby is 8 teams deep, which is pretty incredible. Your gut feeling, because I know what you said at the very beginning. Do you still hold to the belief that Bryce is simply going to sign with the highest bidder?
Yeah, but it's been complicated by the fact that it looks like the Giants are going to be the highest per season, but not the highest total from the rumors that were out there. So is it
what was the so what are we talking about 7-8 years instead of 10?
Right. And so does he go for highest average annual value or highest total compensation? Because you take 6 years or 7 years. All of a sudden, you're still kind of in your prime, and you can sign another long-term deal at the end of that.
Well, Adam had a question about 4 days ago that we never got to. What's going to happen first? Bryce Harper signing or Anthony Davis is traded? I think we pretty much know the correct answer.